Welcome to Shedding Light Hunting Stories Podcast, a podcast dedicated to the average Joe and their great hunting stories. I'm your host, Travis Williams. You're listening to episode 178. Hey guys, welcome to the show. Hope that you are having a fantastic week. Things are going well your way. And for me, it's a little bittersweet. I'm kind of in that weird mode. Deer season has officially ended this past Sunday here in Ohio. And maybe for you, it ends back in December or January early on. But for us, ours runs basically the last weekend in September all the way up into the first weekend in February. And I was pretty well done hunting, but as you'll discover as I talk to this guest, kind of the fire got relit for me. And this past Saturday was my last hunt. And it was a lot of fun. Just shooting the recurve, getting excited about that has just been a lot of fun. Been shooting a good bit and shooting pretty well at 15, 20 yards. So I decided to go out to this property where I saw a lot of deer on a hunt there. I think it was about a week and a half ago. And scouted it earlier this week, got up in a spot, and man, it was close. It was so close for my last hunt. I was sitting kind of on this hillside up on this right away, and to my right is like this little valley of timber. Not very much, it's kind of like a sliver. But I'm behind, tucked in behind like a briar patch, sitting off of a path that I think the deer are going to come in on. And sitting on the side of a hill and a little stool is not super comfortable. So I was there for about an hour and I said I was going to stand up and just kind of look off to my left. And so I stand up nice and easy and I'm looking around. And then it's just, you know how it is. Like you look away and then you look back and all of a sudden you realize, oh, there's a deer staring right at me. And sure enough, I'm looking to my left, and over my left, there's actually like a fence row. It's an old fence with a little bit of trees kind of up and down it. And on the other side is this doe, and she's staring right at me. And I'm like, shoot, I'm busted. But she puts her head down, starts feeding, puts her head behind a tree. So I sit back down, get my bow up, get the camera on her, and she's still kind of looking my way like she saw something but wasn't sure. And I think, man, she's about to cross this fence. There's a gap. She's going to come through. And just as she starts walking toward the fence, she just seemed like something wasn't right. She turns around, walks away from me. I'm like, oh, man, there's that. But then I hear movement from my right, and a deer has came into this little valley and is making its way out, and it's about to come up out of the ravine and come across this path that I'm sitting on. And so I get the bow up, get the camera turned around and everything. And I felt like I had a little bit of forgiveness. I'm on the ground. There's no trees that I could get in. I felt like I could maybe get away with a little bit of movement. So I sit up, get ready to take the shot. And this, I hear the footsteps coming. And I had put my bow in one of those little holders like in the ground. And I realized that if I drew back my bow, that I was probably going to hit that. And so I kind of reached down nice and soft, you know, real quiet like, and pulled that out of the ground and laid it down. I don't know if it was that or if my scent swirled just a little bit. I'm not sure what it was, but whatever it was, the deer stopped moving. And then next thing I know, I hear footsteps going away, and that deer never came in. And I think that deer was probably within 30 yards. Not sure, but it was headed down the path that I thought it was going to. So almost, but did not come together. So, you know, it was an awesome hunt. Enjoyed it. Last hunt of the season for me. So now kind of start, just enjoying bows and Bibles and those things. I tell you a little bit about what that is in this episode. And then getting ready for turkey season, obviously. So that's around the bend. Still got a couple months before that kicks in. But yeah, I mean, it was an amazing 2022-2023 season. Ended up with two deer, plenty of recoveries with my buddies. Every guy in Shedding Light Outdoors was able to get a buck this year, which has not happened before. Usually I'm the guy kind of holding us up, but just an amazing year all around, and we're just grateful for that. Today's story actually revolves around a hunt I had a few weeks ago with my buddy Matt Dove. Now, if you remember Matt's been on the show a few times, but you might know him mostly from our elk trip. Went to Montana with Matt. He and I went out together and had a great hunt, almost got him an elk. And so this is kind of a catch-up episode. We hear about his season, and he kind of brings us through what's been going on, some public land. Matt hunts a ton of public land in Ohio, And since he lives in the middle of Columbus downtown area, well, not really downtown, but he lives in, you know, populated area, he has to go out to find his places. And then Matt reached out to me and wanted to go on a private land hunt. He got a little tired of the public land game, wanted something to be a little bit simpler, and wanted to get his first deer with a muzzleloader. And I can tell you, it's a really cool story. We kind of unpack it and have a good time with that. And definitely stick around toward the end. Matt always has some sort of thing that just kind of ties it all together, and felt like he did a great job in this episode. So I want to say thank you, guys. I am just trying to line up some new guests for 2023. So if you have any hunting stories that you would like to tell, send me an email at sheddinglightod@gmail.com. Would love to have you on, hear your hunting stories. And, you know, I'm looking for anything. It could be deer, turkeys from this past season, turkey stories, duck stories, elk, whatever. I'd love to hear a different variety, and would love to have you guys on to hear those. So send me that email or send me a message on Facebook or Instagram. Just want to say thanks for listening. Without any further ado, we're going to jump in. Here's my good buddy, Matt Dove. All right. Well, joining me from Columbus, Ohio, Matt Dove. How you doing, buddy?
It's good to be back. I'm doing okay. Doing all right. Just kind of in a busy season right now, but blessed to be back talking with you. And whenever we're together, whether it's on a hunt in the hills of Montana or in the hill country of Southern Ohio, it's just always a good time. So
Absolutely. But those things out in Montana are called mountains, Matt. I don't know if you remember. It's been a few months, but holy cow.
Yeah, dude. It's funny because on the East Coast, like, I look at these mountains and they're not as equivalent. Some are, but it's like, I look at them, I'm like, we hike that. Like, we hike the equivalent of a mountain. And in Southern Ohio, the best you have is kind of like hills. And it's just not quite the same. But yeah, man, it's good being back with you, and excited for tonight. So
yeah, me too, man. I just wanted to catch up with you, see how your season went. Now, I was with you on one hunt, and we'll get to that story. But there's some other excitement things. But just give us a quick update. What's been going on? I guess since the last podcast you were on with me, we were on our way home recording a podcast on the way home from Montana. So how's your hunting season been?
Wow. Well, I'll say that, man, that Montana trip was a lot. A lot of just planning and just training, like CrossFit, getting in shape. Money, a lot went into that trip, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, with me, like, I'm not married, I don't have kids, so in my heart and mind, I was like, yo, it's like now or never, like, let's break the ice on an out west trip, something I've always wanted to do. And so when you gave me that call, I was like, I have to go. So we went, and it was awesome. I think I'm still recovering from it because it was one of the most challenging, mentally challenging, just trips and experiences I've ever been on. But super fun, super cool. But which for the remainder of, so when we got back to Ohio, like, boom, we're full fledged in the whitetail season. Mm-hmm. Or it came on rather quickly once we got back, but I was just kind of in recovery mode, got to get caught back up in work and life and projects and all these things I have going on. And so whitetail hunting kind of took the back seat. I had a 5-day rutcation plan for the first part of November, with a few guys of mine, my buddy Garrett and Charlie. And I met those group of guys, when was it, two, three years ago, on public land here in Ohio, out in the middle of the wilderness. And so that's how we connected. And then
that's cool.
We stay in touch. And honestly, tonight I was driving home from work, I was on a three-way phone call with them, and just catching up with those guys. And so we meet up here in a southern part of Ohio to hunt public land every year. And so it's just cool how God orchestrated that and how he brought some hunters together literally out in the middle of wilderness. But beyond that, it's the relationship with those guys has been an edifying relationship. And we were just earlier, we were talking about faith and God and church and just so many other things. And so it's cool. It's cool to have those connections and just how God can kind of orchestrate that and use our passions, right, to help live out our purpose. And,
absolutely, man. That kind of reminds me a little bit. I mean, last week I touched on a little bit, but like Bows and Bibles has kind of started going down that path a little bit, and that's been that's been pretty neat, you know, for sure. I mean, to see some of that.
Yeah, I've seen some Instagram and maybe even Facebook posts about that, which seems pretty cool. I've seen some pictures of guys attending that. If I live near you, I'd definitely be there for sure. But it looks a lot of fun.
2 hour drive. It's not too bad for you, right?
It's worth it. It'd be worth it. But can you explain to me a little bit more about what that actually is? And it's a newer thing, right? So
we're 3 weeks in. 3 weeks into it, and it's so last week I had Jesse Roush on, local guy, and we touched on it just a little bit, but I don't think I really explained it a whole lot. So got to rewind about a year ago. I was at a shoot, and they used to have this indoor winter league at the local archery range. There's an indoor 20 yard. You could actually shoot 30 yards. It's pretty sweet. And they would do 3D targets set out, and there'd be a bunch of them. And, you could come either on Tuesdays or Thursdays and shoot. And so I started doing that about 4 or 5 years ago, and I loved it. It was a lot of fun. I'm not great at it, but I had 1 week where I did like really, really well, like just like almost bragging a little bit, sending people pictures, like my score. Like I was like shooting, for me, like a really good score, which was really bad because it got to my head. And then the next time I went, the wheels fell off the bus, right? Like I shot terrible. Yeah. And that night, go ahead.
No, I was saying God will humble us like that.
Absolutely. I needed it. I really did, because that's not why I'm at the bow shop. I reminded myself of that going into the following week. I was like, man, God, I was like, I'm here to meet people, make connections, share my faith. You know, it's not about how I shoot. So I don't know what the step is or if there's anything I need to do, but if you just show me what that is, I'd appreciate it. And so I met this guy named Nate Root, and Nate and I shot in lanes next to each other. We're talking, just having a good time, and he's a really good shooter. So I got to talking to him, and he asked me what I did for a living, and I told him that I'm a minister. And so he seemed intrigued by that for some reason. And at the end of the shoot, we're kind of packing up our gear and stuff, and he says, hey, I just want to throw out an idea. He goes, I love archery, but I love the Lord, and I would love to just like do some sort of like Bible study with guys, but also shoot our bows at the same time. And he goes, I don't know that I can really lead a Bible study super well, but I figure you probably can. So what do you think about that? And I was like, we need to do this. Was just like fell in my lap kind of thing, like an answer. We didn't know what to do with it. We tried in I think it was like April, May. We were trying to get some guys together and go to like an outdoor, like like a target shoot thing and do something there. And we didn't give it a name. We were just like, we're just trying to do by word of mouth kind of thing. Like, guys, come on over, let's shoot. And then we thought, if we get a few guys for a few weeks, then we'll bring up the Bible part of it and see if people are interested and go from there. And honestly, we tried it like 2 or 3 times and we had one guy show up. That was it. And so we're like, this, the timing is not right on this. It's almost summer, turkey season still on, like, let's just table it for now. And so we did. But he and I became closer buddies, you know, and he filmed some for Shedding Light this year. And then we asked him to be a full fledged, you know, a contributor. And he joined Shedding Light Outdoors. And then fast forward a little bit here, we get into this month, and we start talking to the bow shop owner about winter league. And he's like, guys, I'm not doing winter league this year. He goes, it's a lot of work. I'd rather do some other things, focus on some other stuff. So we're not going to do that. And so I talked to Nate and I said, this might be our opportunity. So we approached the shop owner, who's a Christian, and just said, hey, what would you think about us coming in doing this thing called Bows and Bibles? Now, if we're being honest, Matt, I like the name Bros and Arrows better, but I got shot down. Nobody wanted Bros and Arrows.
Bros and Arrows, so. Yeah. So, creative though. I like it. I like it.
Thank you. Thank you. So we went with Bows and Bibles. The shop owner was like, yeah, absolutely do it. And so we promoted it for like 2 or 3 weeks. And the first week we had 12. Next week we had 13. And then this past week we had 10 guys show up. And just really cool. So we just start off, we just talk about what does it look like to be a man of integrity. Look at a, like we do like a 15. I keep it kind of light right now, just kind of feeling the room out. But gotten good participation. Try and make it like a discussion. You know, we're just looking at different dudes in the Bible and what we can learn from them, the things that, I guess, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and how it applies to us, and just kind of picking a little bit of a theme with each guy that we run into. And so that's been cool. And then Nate, a really cool thing for him is that he went to the Lancaster Archery Classic last weekend. And 174 archers in the bow hunter class, his very first time doing a paper shoot like that. And he won it all, like day one. Yeah. Day one qualified for the elimination round. He went up, two different times on the next day. He had the, he tied and it was the closest to center shot, like one shot, like move on or don't. And the one guy he shot against, like it was like within like millimeters, like they had to get out like a little. And so he advanced to the next day where it's, you're on the stage, lights are dim, spotlight on you, video cameras, like, and all that. And he had to shoot against number four, 'cause he was three. And if you shoot, you just keep moving up. So then he had to shoot against number two and he won that. And he had to shoot against number one and he won it all.
What?
So just this is like
a Brock Purdy story right here.
It is.
It's crazy, so, man.
So anyway, yeah, all that long story short, but the, yeah, that's kind of where the year's been with Nate Root and I and Bows and Bibles. And it's just been, we're getting ready. We just thought of an idea yesterday. We're going to do a Valentine's Day Cupid shoot off. So it's, we're having guys bring their significant others. You can come single if you want to, but there's also, you can bring your wife or bring your husband, whatever, whoever shoots, and we'll provide bows if you don't have one. We're going to do like fancy hors d'oeuvres and lights. And the shoot will basically be, there's, you know, Cupid is going to shoot something during a round and you have to see if you can beat his score kind of deal. So
that's cool. Dude, that's
I thought about dressing Nate Root up as Cupid, but I nobody would be able to beat him. So I decided not to do that. So.
Dude, that's funny. Dude, that's a cool story, man. All that. That is awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, man, I appreciate asking. Yeah. It's been neat. Yeah. Starting to get to know some guys a little bit better. Like afterwards, we'll kind of talk and it's just been good. It's just been a great way to get into the Bible, shoot our bows. It's been fun. So
that's cool, man. That's cool. But
yeah,
love to hear that. Yeah, my whitetail season, man. It's just, I've been super, super, super busy. Just taking on a lot of projects throughout the fall. And, looking back, man, I was just too slammed with so many things. And, I've decided going into next fall that, my life will be greatly scaled back. So that not just the whitetail, season, but you know, I was looking at my life and I'm like, man, I'm not able to connect with as many people outside of work, related stuff that I would like to.
Right.
And a lot of that has to do with just kind of like, you know, just ministry, just building relationships with people. And so just looking back at this last fall, I was like, you know what? I can't do that again. I just can't. Like I've got to be more freed up, to whitetail hunt just because I didn't get to do a lot of it, and B, to be able to connect with people. And a lot of that coincides with whitetail hunting. I was able to take one guy out this year, who's never been deer hunting. I took him out deer hunting. His name is Travis, actually. And, great name to have. But he grew up in the woods, but he didn't grow up, he never had like a father figure to really take him hunting. And, he's actually a guy at my church and he was going through a lot, just so much going on in his life. And just kind of down the dumps. And it was funny, his wife at church came up to me and was like, hey, like, I think Travis could use a hunting trip with you. Like, he's just been, he's got a lot going on. He's got,
yeah,
like, so basically giving me permission, like, hey, I'll take my husband and just go. And so I got us a cabin down in the southern part of Ohio. And for 2 days, him and I just, the first day was, so it was a Friday and Saturday. The first day was just squirrel hunting. Now he has gotten into that the past few years and he loves to squirrel hunt. And so Friday was a squirrel hunting day. And then Saturday, it was the extended rifle season up here, the extended gun season here in Ohio.
Right.
And yeah. So, the next day we focused on whitetails and, long story short, he didn't get a squirrel, nor a deer, froze his tail off both hunts. but he had the time of his life and yeah. He came back home and his wife the next Sunday just thanked me and said he is like he's just rejuvenated and he has spirits about him now. And so, you know, it in the past, like the old Matt would not take opportunities to take other people out into the woods because it was often about, oh, it's me time. If they're hunting, then I can't focus on my hunting or I might miss out on an animal. But when you take yourself out of that and you step back and you're like, you know what, this can be a tool to really connect with individuals out in the wilderness. And there's something holistic about being out in God's creation. And it seems like men especially, we carry a bunch of weight. We have high walls. Like we're told we have to be tough. Therefore, we can't talk about our problems and issues. But when you get a man out in the wilderness and it's just you and him and God and creation, like their walls tend to come down a lot. So it was a good chance for him and I just kind of dive into where, not just him, but where I've been lately and to really use that just kind of a ministry opportunity, which is really, it was really cool. So
absolutely, man. I relate to that a lot. I have to balance it. I love taking people out. I really do, but I have to pick and choose, you know, with a family and having my wife and two kids. And what was fortunate for me this year was God allowed me to tag out, you know, but shoot my buck, I guess. I shot a doe early on and then I got a buck on November 3rd. And so from that point on, I was just like, I mean, I was able to chill and not hunt as much. And then, but then I was able to start picking hunts. Like I could plan it out like a week in advance. Like there was a neighbor down the road. I took his boy out and that was cool. And then Riley, was able to kind of go out one hunt with him and then kind of set him up to go on his own. And he shot his own buck and then helped buddies drag deer out. You know, it was just like, it was really rewarding, this year because I don't know about you, but for me coming back from an elk trip, that's a tremendous amount of like time, energy going into it. It's also a tremendous amount of time away from my family. So I really tried to like, I tried to control it this year. And I feel like I did. I was looking, I was curious about this as you were talking there. So last year, I keep a log of all my hunts. And so in the 2021, 2022 season, I hunted 37 times. So that's a lot. You know, that's a lot. Not as many as I had before. This season, 17 is the amount of times I've gone. You know, so I've about cut it in half. But I can tell you this: this season was way more enjoyable than last season was. Picking my hunts, and of course, I was fortunate. You know, if I don't shoot that buck on November 3rd, then maybe I hunt more. But yeah, there's something neat about taking guys out and just spending that time. It's just, I love that. That's one of the things I loved our hunt together. We'll get to that in a minute, but that,
yeah,
that's definitely a great part of it.
For
so
sure.
I know, I know. So let's go ahead and jump. Let's start jumping into it. Now I know you're hunting public land. And so take us up to the point where, you're getting close to your rutcation and those kind of things. Kind of bring us through that a little bit, Matt.
Yeah, so rutcation was scheduled the first week of November. Again, like I said earlier, my buddy Garrett and Charlie, we meet up every year at a cabin down here in southern Ohio, and we just hunt until we can't. Long story short, the weather was just not cooperating. It was, I think it was closer to 70 degrees most days. Deer were not moving during daylight hours because why would they? They've got their winter coats on. And so they hunker down until night and then they rut through the night. Now, you can still get a buck cruising during those temps. It's just the deer are not as active overall. So they just kind of hunker down until the cooler temps in the night. They get up and move. But that it ended up being like just a, for me, as far as deer movement, and it ended up being a bust. But my buddy Charlie, he ended up getting him a solid buck up there. I think it was a 10 point. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was. But it was a funny story. I'll just tell this real quick. Him and my buddy Garrett, they were out scouting this kind of newer piece of public that they'd never been out scouting before. And they climbed up on this ridge top and they're looking over this big old like brushy field. It's super open. But behind them, they had their backs to the ridge top, and it was just kind of a wood line up there. And they're sitting just inside this wood line, and they're sitting down because they're taking a breather because they just hiked up this, you know, this massive hillside. Mm-hmm. And they hear like noise coming over the ridge. And the next thing you know, a doe just pops over, just running like for its life. And then right behind her was this buck. And they watch this buck and doe like run out of their sight, like nothing they can do. So they just kind of sat back and enjoyed what they were witnessing. And then next thing you know, like 30 seconds later, this doe comes running right back towards them. And of course brought that buck. And so they stopped that buck at 30 yards. Charlie, they're sitting on the ground. My buddy Garrett stops it and yells at Charlie, like, shoot it. So Charlie releases an arrow and just double lungs this thing. They watch this buck run down to the bottom, and they lost sight in the brush. And so I was actually joining them that day. And so I was able to meet up with them, and we went out and tracked that buck. And so it was a really cool experience for them. And the excitement and the joy of that was just like unmatched, which is really cool. But the rest of that trip, I did what I could to be out there, and just, I was trying to think outside the box. I was trying to get in thick bedding. I was trying new areas. And then just no matter where I was, like I only saw, I believe it's just a couple does. But the deer were just not moving. It was not like the year before where we had temps that were at the max 30 degrees throughout the day, and these deer were moving nonstop. So it just made it really tough. But so that was the rutcation. And then I took a break. Of course, the temperatures, they tend to drop off when I'm not on my rutcation. But so I didn't pick up hunting until gun season here in Ohio, which is on the tail end of November. And so went out there, went back down to public land, got a small cabin I rented out, just kind of stay out of the elements. And I'm trying to think. So yeah, it was opening day of gun season here in Ohio, and I go to my usual spot that I like to go to during gun season, and it's I'm basically up on this ridge top looking down over this bottom thicket, and there's a creek running through it, and there's three draws that kind of all three of these draws connect down to this bottom that I'm looking over. And so as these deer get pushed and starts going off on the public surrounding land around me, these deer like to run down to these bottom thickets and hunker down. And so the goal is for me to kind of intercept them as they're making their way down to the bottoms. But
and you're gun hunting, right?
I'm gun hunting at this point. Yes.
Okay.
And so, I get up there an hour before sunlight, beat every hunter to the woods. Like that's my goal. Like I just want to be in there, kind of claim my spot, be really like quiet and still, let nature kind of get back to its normal rhythm. And then about an hour later is when I see the truck start rolling down these gravel roads, and I could see these hunters getting in the woods and see their headlights flashing as they're climbing up to these ridge tops, and it looks like they're climbing up in their climbers or whatever. But this past opener, there was just a lot of hunters, and didn't see any deer that, well, I did. I saw two does that morning. Was hoping to see like a solid buck that I could get a shot off. Just didn't. didn't see that. I decided to kind of, instead of being just isolated, I'm going to start moving. So I went down the bottom thickets. And in that process, I ran into like three or four other hunters that were down there as well. So I was covered up in hunters and kept running into them. And they were all, for the most part, like super cool. We're just all out having a good time. And we'd wave at each other and just keep moving and stuff. But there was just hunters everywhere. And went out that evening to a spot where kind of a similar concept. There's a creek bottom that backs up to a bunch of thickets. I'm kind of sitting up on this ridge looking down into it. Night came that evening, didn't see a thing. And then the next morning, it got to the point where I'm like, okay, so it's next day, I only have one more day to hunt. So I got to the point where, you know what, if I see a doe, I'm gonna take it. And if it's a mature doe, like, it's down. Mm-hmm. And so with this hunt, my goal was like, hey, where's this spot that I think is pretty darn overlooked, where I don't think there's any real hunting pressure. And so where I hunted the day before was these kind of big chunks of public, and which is cool because you can get back down in there pretty far back into the ridges and things like that. But I'm like, what are some overlooked spots that, you know, simply where, okay, like, if there's not going to be pressure, hopefully there's going to be deer. And mm-hmm. and I had this one spot marked, and I've always kind of kept it in my back pocket. And I'm like, you know what, like, I think this is the day that I'm going to approach this spot. And it's a unique area because the piece of public itself in this particular spot is probably, like, I'd say 200 acres max. But on to the north of this piece of public is a major highway. To the south is some residentials, and there's like a I don't know what you call it, like a sawmill. It's where they make pallets and all that.
Yeah.
So there's nonstop like commotion and sawing, and there's trucks driving in and out. To the east, there is residential houses. And then to the west, there's some more like private land and stuff. So it's just surrounded by private and roads, but there's so much commotion going on.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what, I think this could be an easily kind of overlooked spot. And I know that on the northeast side of this piece of public, where it kind of backs up to that highway, it dumps down into a swamp bottom, and it's super thick. And I'm like, you know what, I think if I get the wind right, and if I can kind of creep through there, I think I can run into some deer. So I parked the truck, jumped down in there, and did what I could to get the wind right. But the wind was just kind of shifty with where I was at. But I was like, you know what, if I creep up through this kind of swampy thicket type of stuff, like, at some point I'm bound to see a deer. And so I get down in there, and I'm seeing scrapes galore. Like, there's scrapes everywhere. There's rubs, there's worn out trails. And I'm like, there's gotta be something in here. Right. So I get probably about 20 minutes into my, and I'm doing like a slow stalk where I'm taking probably four or five steps, and I'm just stopping, and I'm listening, and I'm looking, and I wait for probably a minute. And then I repeat that process. So I'm slowly working my way, tiptoeing through this bottom thicket, which is actually pretty hard to do because some spots, like, there's briars and all that. So I really take my time moving through, but I end up bumping two does, and they ran up on this ridge about midway up, and I immediately threw my gun up to my shoulder, took it off safe, and I'm looking, I'm like, yep, clearly two does. And I picked the biggest one, and I'm like, okay, Matt, do I take it? Do I not? And I'm like, Matt, like, you may not see another deer for the rest of the day. So go ahead and take this. And so, took the shot, the deer ran further up the ravine and disappeared into some kind of briary brush type deal. And, I'm like, okay, like, well, that just happened. And so I decided, so I had another tag. So on public land in Ohio, you can only take one doe. And then also in Ohio, whether it's private or public, you can only take one buck, but you can take another deer as long as you have a tag. So I had an extra tag, and I decided to walk out the rest of that swamp, taking my time. I did not see another deer the rest of my hunt, but I did do some good intel scouting for next year. And so I have places where what looked to be really good buck bedding. I have places like scrapes marked and everything, major highway trails, and definitely going to hang a camera or two back in there at the beginning of next season. So ended up making my way back to the doe. I found it. And there's a lot of things from the Montana trip that I've carried over now into public hunting here in Ohio.
Yeah.
And we used our frame packs in Montana, and I just got so used to that thing. You know, you got your water, you got the frame itself in case you actually want to pack out deer. You just have room for so much stuff. And you know, when you're getting back on public pretty deep, I want to be able to have, I may not use it, but I just want to be able to have everything that I might possibly need. So I just love being prepared in that way. And so when I found this doe, took pictures with it and everything, was super pumped. It was just exciting. And it was it just got me excited. I felt kind of a kid again. Even though it's a doe, it was so much fun. Found so much joy in that. And I had game bags that I bought from Cabela's. And I'm like, you know what? I know the truck is probably about 100, 150 yards away. But I was like, I want to quarter up this deer and put it in the frame pack and walk this thing out. And so, because we weren't able to do it on an elk out there in Montana. But I'm like,
right,
let me see if we can do this, practice this now with this doe, so that if I were to somehow shoot a buck later on, a 200-pound buck on public, I can get in the habit of quartering up this deer and put it in a game bag. So quartered it up, put it in game bags, put it on my back, and hiked out. And yeah, it takes some time. You know, it takes anywhere from 30 to 45 minutes to pack out this, to quarter up this deer, lay it out on the plastic so it doesn't get dirt or leaves on it. But walking out, it's a little bit of a heavy pack, but walking out was a breeze compared to dragging this deer 150 yards.
Oh, yeah.
And then when you get to the truck, it's already quartered up and you just throw it in the cooler and throw ice on it and you're good to go. So that was my doe experience.
That was cool. I remember watching it on you keep Instagram stories, and I just thought it was neat. You're quartering it up, and I was like, man, I so wish that could have been an elk this year. But it's just neat that you're it's something I'm like, I need to do that at some point, because going elk hunting sooner or later, hopefully I'm in that position, or you and I or whoever we go with at some point we're there. It's it'd be really nice to have some sort of experience. Last time I did that, Travis Shire did all the work. I just basically watched him do his thing and he loaded it and I carried it. That was basically, I didn't really pay a whole lot of attention to what he was doing. It's and I think I could figure it out in the moment, and I will always watch videos, but just having that experience, I've done this before, maybe on a smaller scale, but like you said, dragging a deer by yourself, mature doe, man, that's especially through the hills of Ohio. It's no joke. Yeah. I'm not Cam Haynes. I can't throw it over my shoulder. I don't think it's a lot of work, right?
Yes. Yes. And it's when I was younger, I was hunting with my dad. He always hung his deer. And I've always thought that was just the proper way, which it's very convenient when you have a place to do that. But in college and then living in an apartment here in Columbus, I just don't have that luxury. And so all my deer that I harvest, I've always just quartered up right there on the, on the ground and thrown it in a cooler. And so, the only difference here is, let's just put it in a game bag. Let's do it out here in the field. That's where they get the field dressed from. And throw in the game bags and put it on the frame pack and hike out. And after doing that, I was just like, every from here on out, when I kill a deer on public, I'm just going to quarter it up and put it in the frame pack and hike it to the truck. But it is far easier than, because last year I drug the buck that I shot to the truck and like it about killed me. And it took like an hour to do that. I mean, it was just crazy. But yeah, it was just fun, man. And it was just, it's a doe. But man, I was pumped. I got the meat. That's what I wanted. And
it's a public land though. So there's definitely some challenge. I mean, there's a lot of challenge. There's a lot of pressure out there. So yeah. I think that's definitely an accomplishment. And also I think the way that you did it too, I mean, spot and stop, well, not spot and stop, but like a still hunt, as you'd call it, you know, just kind of creeping your way through and being able to make that shot, you know, that's pretty cool. That's a neat thing.
Yeah. So. It's a different way of doing things instead of just kind of sitting there, you're going to the deer instead of waiting for them to come to you. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So about, did you have any other hunts between that hunt and our hunt?
Let me think.
Cause that would have been about second gun season. And I think messaged me like the week before Christmas.
Mm-hmm. So the only other hunt was with Travis, the guy I took out, and that was the extended gun season. So that was like mid December. But it wasn't long after that is when I messaged you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I got a message saying, "Hey man, muzzleloader season's coming up. Do you have a spot? Maybe we could get together." And I was like, "Oh, I'll have to look." And, so that got me excited again. Cause I think by that point I was like, I think I'm done hunting. I'm just like burnt out. I'm just not burnt out. I mean, I didn't hunt that much, but I shot my buck. I shot my doe, feeling pretty good about it. But the thing that changed a little bit for me was I have a good buddy, Eric Penrod, went with him on that first elk trip, or I guess second. And, he, for his health and, just where his health is at and things like that, he was kind of getting rid of some bows, just trying to take away the temptation and that kind of thing. And he ended up giving me a Hoyt Buffalo, a nice recurve, and said, "Just play with this, have some fun with it." And man, did I started shooting that thing like a ton. And so I started thinking, I was like, man, I ought to take this thing out sometime. I don't know when I'll do that. Well, then I get this message from you saying, "Hey, what do you think about muzzleloader season?" I was like, well, that might get me back in the woods. That might be enough time. And so that's kind of where this started. So I'll turn it back over to you. Why muzzleloader? This was your first muzzleloader, not your first muzzleloader hunt, but first muzzleloader deer, right?
Yeah. I've never killed a deer with a muzzleloader. And I messaged you because at this point in the season, being out on public for the extended gun season here at Ohio, it was very clear and evident that the public land, a lot of where I hunt, was just pressured to no end. There was hardly any deer left. And I was like, you know what? It'd be cool to switch it up and ask around and see if I can get a hunt on some private somewhere. And that way there's, you know, you're not dealing with the pressure or the same amount of pressure. And I was like, you know what, let me reach out to Travis. Let me see if he has any property or, just availability to where maybe him and I can get together and, go for a muzzleloader hunt. And my goal for this, was not horns at all. Like I just simply want to shoot a doe with my muzzleloader. It's just something I've never done. I've never killed a deer with a muzzleloader. So, I was like, let me see what we can do. So
now you just got your muzzleloader like last year though, didn't you? It's been like
a year. Yeah. I got it last year and let me think. Yeah. I got it last year. Took it on a public land hunt for 2 days and, was not successful. So we didn't see a deer at all. So, but, so I was like, you know what, let's see if we can get a deer down with a muzzleloader. And, the goal was not to get horns on the ground. I was like, I like eating deer. I eat it all the time. And so I have an extra tag. Let's just see if I can make that happen. So.
Yeah. And I'm extremely blessed. Just to have one thing with church is it definitely gives you a network of people to talk to and meet. And, so one of the properties that I started hunting several years ago, in fact, that you and I turkey hunted it, a guy at church has this, it's basically like an old farm. He doesn't really farm it anymore. Some other people do. And there's two sides to it. There's like a road that splits it. And the one side is behind his house. And that's where Bobby Andrews shot his 145 inch buck whenever he came up, which is kind of like crazy hunt. The wind wasn't right for that spot. And there's another guy that hunts there. And since Bobby shot that buck, I told that guy, I was like, I'm not going to take anybody else over there. I'm going to hunt the other side. And so I kind of left it for that other guy. And so that kind of left us with the other side. The wind was right. They had cut the corn and they cut it late there. But I hadn't hunted it in a while. So I guess I'll do the storytelling up until the hunt. But so I went over and you and I talked about it. I was like, deer might be coming out in that field, but they could literally come out in any spot. So in Ohio, it's legal to throw out a little bit of corn. I was like, let me throw out some corn. I don't know if it'll last, you know, it'll depend on whenever I put it out. I'm only going to put out like 50 pounds and I'm going to throw a cell cam on it and let's see what comes in. And I did that. I think it was maybe 3 days, 2 days before you came in. It's a little bit of a hike over there. I threw on a weighted pack. I had my frame pack and hiked up and in. And it's, it's not like super far, but it's like half, maybe half a mile, something like that. Went over there, dumped out the corn, put it up, and started getting pictures. Like, I think that night I started sending you some. Seemed like there was a decent amount of just deer. And then there were some nice bucks. Honestly, there was some like bucks on there. I was like, holy cow, like that, this could happen. The weather seemed to be like it was going to be, good. But I also thought you were coming in on Friday night? Is that right?
Let me think. Yeah, it was a Friday night. Mm-hmm.
And so the game plan was to hunt Saturday morning. I had another spot picked out Saturday morning that was going to be natural movement, up on the Amish property. And I thought, let's go there first. If we get something, great. If not, we got the corn pile to fall back on over on the other side and see how that goes. And so that was the game plan. And then at the same time, I was like, I'm going to bring my recurve. I'll film you. You're going to be the primary shooter, but maybe something can happen where, how cool would it be for you to shoot your first deer with a muzzleloader and me shoot my first deer with a recurve? I might as well bring it. It doesn't weigh hardly anything. Yeah. And I can. So that's kind of the setup. So you take it from there.
Yeah. So I get there Friday night. I'm kind of battling this sinus infection. I mean, I don't even know what it was. It wasn't COVID. I tested for that. It wasn't COVID. But there's for half the day, I'd feel good. For another half of the day, like I'd feel off. And it was just back and forth. And so I get to Travis's that evening. Feel okay. Like I feel all right. And then I noticed as the night fell, especially about the time I started to head to bed, I'm like, I don't feel well. Like I'm hot and cold and congested. And I started to develop this pretty bad, like headache. It wasn't like a fever, but my head was just hurting. And so I think it definitely had to do with like the pressure and the sinuses and all that. Mm-hmm. And so that night, I could not sleep for the life of me. I think I texted you at 2:30, 3 a.m. saying, hey, when you wake up, come bring me medicine because I'm out. Like I didn't have any. And so you woke up, I think around 3:30-ish to let your dog out.
Yeah.
And saw my message and she came down and gave me some.
I was like, are you still awake? I was like, this is not good. This is not good. Yeah. I was like, this is
And I'm laying there and I'm like, there is no way for the life of me that I'm gonna get up in about 2 hours. And with Amish country or not, or the Amish property, our hunting spot was kind of way up on this ridge side, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's gonna be a hike to get up there. And I'll be honest, I was not looking forward to it. I was like, it's gonna be cold. We're gonna be sweaty by the time we get up to it. And then I didn't have a tree picked out or anything. It was just gonna be going in blind hunting off a previous experience. And I was not at all disappointed if you decided not to go.
And I figured like you would not be upset either. And so I needed the sleep. And so I slept in, I think, till about, I want to say close to noon, somewhere in there.
I was worried. I went and made sure you weren't dying. I thought you were dead down there. So.
Yeah, dude, I was out. That NyQuil dude did a number, but it was needed. Like, I was so worn out. And I felt bad, dude. I honestly felt so bad because I'm like, here I am. I drove all this way. And like, I just, like, this guy was looking forward to going hunting in the morning. I'm like, man, I'm messing this up. Like, and, but at the end of the day,
at least we didn't do some death hike 3 miles up the side of a mountain and then you got sick. You know, I mean, that would be awful if that happened.
100%. And then, so I woke up around noon. And your wife was happy because you were able to bring her breakfast in bed. That's what she told me. So she was pumped. Yep. And then you fed me brunch. So I ate that and I honestly felt pretty good. I remember you gave me some more meds to just kind of hold me off or whatever. And I'm like, man, I'm all drugged up, but man, let's go hunting. So we get all geared up at your house. We head out to the farm. So I've got my muzzleloader, you've got your longbow. We hike all the way up to that top part of the field. It's a decent amount of elevation up there. And you had a tree already pre-picked out. And go ahead.
I regretted that one. I picked out a tree. I'm really bad at picking out trees in the daylight. I think I'm actually better like in darkness. I don't know why, but it's like I put out the corn, and the problem is there's honestly, even though it's like a field edge, there's not a ton of like great trees in proximity to where this heavy path was that the deer were coming out. There's already a path there. I put the corn on the path really just to get the pictures, and I was trying to back off of it. And so in my mind, that tree that we ended up in, I figured I felt like it was 70 yards. If we're looking at it, that's north. I thought it was 70 yards to the east. And it was about 30 on it. and we had a southwest wind. And so we really couldn't, at least that's what it was supposed to be in this spot. And so basically our scent would be blowing over basically our left-hand shoulder going out into the field, but not angling up to where the corn was. And so my thought was any deer that were bedded on that neighboring property could J-hook, walk the field edge down, come right into the corn maybe, and they shouldn't catch our scent. But then I realized, man, I picked that tree and it had a ton of limbs on it. And I didn't think it had hardly any limbs on it. So yeah, that's I'm not really great at picking out trees apparently.
Yeah. So we stuck to the plan. You got up there first, took a minute. And then I worked my way up and with the help of you and myself got my platform up because we're both in saddles. Yeah. And it was a little sketch, but like I was harnessed in the whole way. If I would have slipped, you know, the lineman's rope and everything would have caught me. But so we make our way up that tree and we get all like settled up in there. And we got settled in around, was it about 2:30?
I think it was 2:33, something like that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so we get all settled up in there and, you know, I know you're filming and stuff. And, so you've got your camera and I like to do the Instagram story. So I've got my phone. We're like, you know, we're doing our thing, communicating, talking, and, we just kind of settle into the hunt and let the woods kind of ease back down a little bit. And I'd say what was about an hour goes by roughly. And you look over your shoulder. So you look kind of over your right and I'm down to my left. You immediately spot two deer. And I remember you say, you're like, buck, 2 bucks. And I look over and sure enough, about, I'd say they're probably 60-ish yards, 5 yards, somewhere in there away from us are these 2 bucks that like, I should have spot them, but I don't know where the heck they came from. I should have seen them coming, but I don't know where I was looking, but they were there. And so I grab my muzzleloader, immediately throw it up on them, and I immediately start to look at their body and their rack. And then I went to the next one, looked at the body, then looked at the rack. And it was very evident that one may have been a 1.5-year-old and the other one may have been like a 2.5-year-old.
Yeah. Four corns, very small.
Yeah. And I think one was a 4 and I think one was like kind of barely a 6. And so I mean, it was not even a temptation for me. Like, I'm here to my main goal is like just a mature doe, and I'm not here to shoot your 1.5 or 2.5 year old deer, because they can't grow up to be something bigger, but, it's just not what I was after. And so like, let them go. Our wind was actually drifting down towards them at the time.
Yeah. And it felt like forever. They like, we looked down and see them, and I think we were kind of getting the camera, and I didn't know exactly what they were. And all of a sudden, like, one of them pins, and they froze, and it's starting to get a little bit chilly at this point too. So that's whenever I realized at that point, I've got on all the layers that I can wear. And I'm like, we still got an hour and a half before it gets dark. And I'm just sitting there like trying not to move, cause I don't want them to blow. That's the last thing I want. I don't want blow city. Cause this little spot that we're in, I'll explain this a little bit more. It's just like a finger, like the property, like it's only a finger of woods. It basically goes out to a fingertip, and then that's where the field's at. And there's basically a creek down there where they could have came from the other side of the creek, or they might've skirted out around from the neighboring property. But there's really, I've been in that spot before many times, and I've had a deer blow, and the hunt's pretty well over because the bedding, I don't think, is too far to the west. And so I was really nervous about that. So I'm freezing. I'm trying not to move. But fortunately, I mean, I think their tails went up and they trotted off, but there was no blow. So that was the good part about that situation.
Yeah. Yeah. They didn't blow. I think they obviously smelt us, but even though we're skyline to no end, I don't think, and I could be wrong, but I don't know if they ever like necessarily pegged us. They did look our direction. But I don't know if they actually like nailed us in that tree. But so like Travis said, they ended up working off. And then I'd say, you'd say like maybe another hour went by.
I think so. I think it was getting down. Yeah, it was getting down. I think, probably about an hour. So it got maybe about a half hour, 45 minutes of daylight after this part, I think.
Yeah. And so I'm on one side of the tree. You're on the complete opposite side. So it's hard for me to really see around the tree. But Travis has a vantage point in where we think these deer are bedded and where they think they'll be coming from. Where he was positioned, it was just more likely he would see deer coming from that direction before I did. And so I remember you said like deer or doe or whatever. And so I immediately grabbed my muzzleloader, and this doe takes a good while, but eventually works its way out to the corn pile. Mm-hmm. And this was, I believe it was a yearling. This is the size of it. And I just couldn't get myself to shoot it. And I'm like, I know it's a doe, but I'm like, I want a mature doe. Like, I don't want to shoot a yearling. And so that yearling, go ahead.
And I'm praying that you will shoot this deer, cause I'm freezing to death.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, well,
Matt, kill it. It'll taste really good. And we can go home.
But you underdressed. I underdressed. Yeah. Like, I don't know what you and I were thinking. Like, you and I we're experienced hunters. And we just
I think what it was is like middle of the day, it kind of warmed up a little bit. And so when we're getting ready to leave, I'm like, I don't want to sweat, you know? And I didn't think about how cold it was going to get. But no, I probably would have passed on. It was a very small young deer, but as it was coming in, I was getting excited because I couldn't really tell. And then when it shows up, you're just like, why couldn't you be bigger? Like,
yes.
But then there's 100. Also this, the other thing in my mind is like chances. I'm like, man, I feel like there should be other deer coming in after this, but I just don't know that. Like we're probably, if I remember right, gray light is kind of like catching. It's getting down to probably half hour, maybe 45 minutes most before it's all said and done. And this is your only hunt with me, most likely. I mean, this is the end of muzzleloader season. So yeah.
And I've got to go back that night because I got church in the morning but for me this is my last hunt of the year. And so this doe was broadside, like you were filming it, and I'm sitting here like, do I just take this? Like, will I regret this later? Like, but I'm just like, no, like just wait, like this, like just wait. And eventually, I don't know if I made a noise in the tree or wind shifted or what, but the deer ended up kind of looking our direction and knew something was not quite right.
Yeah.
And this doe, and it probably fed there for about 10 minutes, but then after that, it boogered, it put its tail up and ran back the way it came. But the way it came was where all that bedding's at. And yeah. My fear, I'm like, you know what? Like, oftentimes when deer bed it down and a deer runs by with his tail up, like those deer take off with the deer that's on high alert and running for its life. And so I'm like, crap. I was like, this hunt's over. Like, but I was like, man, like I kind of started to regret it. And I'm like, no, like it was just too young. It was too young for me. So
I was still feeling semi-optimistic, but the big issue at this point is you're shaking at this point, and I'm shaking at this point, because it's kind of like whenever you have a deer at 30, 40 yards or whatever, maybe a little bit further than that, but you know, it's just like you've been holding it together, trying to, like, you know, brace yourself whenever the wind, and we had a lot of wind that night too. So, I mean, it's just like, we can't get away from it. We're freezing. And then we really have to not move when this doe's there. And man, the shakes started. I mean, it's cold at that point. I mean, it's pretty brutal.
I was shaking so bad. Like it was horrible.
And you dropped your hand warmer, right?
And I dropped my electronic hand warmer that out of the tree. So there goes all my warmth. And that thing was like toasty. I think I've never used one before. I got one for Christmas from a family member. And like that thing was keeping me alive in the tree because I was severely underdressed for this moment. But the wind was the biggest factor there. Like it was consistent. At that point, I believe it was kind of out of the north, and like it was just cold, cold, cold air. So we're in the tree, and I would say probably another, what, like 10 minutes goes by, 15 minutes.
Yeah, it wasn't too long after that. I look over to my left and I can see a little ways, and I see some movement.
Yeah. And I remember you say like doe, and then you say a bunch of does, because you could only see bits of pieces of deer moving through to the corn pile. And historically, based off the trail camera, there was a mature group of does that would visit that corn pile.
Five or six of them. Yeah.
Yeah. In the evening. And I'm like, so just when I thought, like, I literally in my head, like a few seconds before Travis spoke, I was like, well, I guess it's just not in the cards. It's just not meant to be. But I'm okay with that. Like, I'm still out here with Travis, still had a heck of a season. We went elk hunting. Like so many people like want to do that and don't get to. And I mean, and so I was just sitting there kind of reflecting. I'm like, man, what an awesome season. But I honestly thought that was it. Like that was like, I just wasn't going to end with a muzzleloader deer. And then you say there's deer coming. And then I knew when you said that, I was like, game on. And so I went from complete, utterly shaking to dead calm. Like, I wish we could access that power on demand, but I guess deer need to be coming for us to do that. Like, we just don't have the willpower to do that unless there's something coming our way. But your mind just kind of goes in like this kill mode. And I was completely, like, utterly calm. I'm like, all right, like, if these are mature does coming, like, they're going to get toasted. And so I see the first deer coming through the brush, and I'm able to throw up the muzzleloader on it to look at it through the scope. And I was like, that's not a doe. I'm like, that's a buck. And not only that's a buck, like that's a decent sized buck. And so I look at you, I'm like, buck, 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 like decent buck, decent buck. And this buck hangs up in this brush in this like briars and thicket. And next thing you know, there's movement coming behind this buck. And I'm like, I don't know, maybe it's does or something that it has with it. But no, another buck pops out. And I'm like, oh, snap, like there's another buck. And then behind that, another buck pops out. I'm like, okay, well, there's another one. And then there's another buck that pops out. And I'm like, oh, this is a bachelor group of bucks.
You didn't know you were hunting with Mark Drury, did you?
I did not, man. You were the deer scientist, whatever they call that. Him.
No.
I don't know what they call him, but.
Lucky is what I am, man. So.
Yeah. So, excuse me. So the one that hung up in the brush was the bigger of the four.
Yeah.
And so, and I think he was wise in doing that. He's like, you little 2.5-year-old bucks, whatever, like you guys go out first. Like I'm gonna hang tight. You guys eat for a second. I'm going to sniff the air. I'm going to get a visual, make sure the coast is clear before I step out into the open. And so I'm as calm as can be. I'm glancing over at you, like you've got your camera rolling, but you're kind of on the other side of the tree.
Yeah. And the other problem is that from my vantage point, I could see down the path that the deer were coming in on, but then I had a massive tree right in front of me that was honestly blocking the corn pile. I could kind of, if I could lean out to the right just a little bit, or kind of just like get closer to the tree, you know, with my saddle, I could see it. But then trying to get the camera on it, I was just like, man, I had that experience with the doe. I was like, it's going to be hard to film this if they come in. So that buck, like you said, he hangs up there, and I don't know if you have him or not. So I'm going to take the camera off of the camera arm, usually a mistake. But I'm like, I'm going to lean out to the left and at least video him, at least get video of this buck. And cause I don't know what's going to go down here in the next 2 seconds. So I'm able to do that. And I'm able to zoom in on him. And I think I tell you, like, I think I got him if you want to take the shot, but I don't know if you couldn't hear me or what, but you didn't quite shoot right then.
Yeah. And so the reason why I was like, I'm going to play it back. I'm going to play it patient. I'm going to let him come to the corn pile.
Yeah.
Now I had him in my crosshairs, but I'm like, in case he gets spookish or whatever, but I'm like, I'm going to let him come to the corn pile. Cause I was thinking about you and the camera. I was like, oh, I'll just wait till Travis can get the for sure shot. And so,
and you don't know that I've taken it off the thing and I'm on the left side of the tree.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea. And I think, like, in the process, when he starts to walk out to that corn pile, I'm like, okay, he's stepping out to the corn pile. Like, but when he gets to the corn pile, I'm not wasting any time. Like, I'm gonna shoot. And so in the process of him walking to the corn pile, I think you try to swing to the complete other side of the tree to get that angle. And I'm like, and I think I hear you say like, shoot. So I take a moment to settle in, but I think in that process, you were still moving.
Well, I'll say this before you finish that. Like, for me, I'm like, I do not want to screw this up because of the camera. Like, I've got the deer coming in. I've got the footage of the deer standing there. And I think I said to you right before that deer took a few steps to go to the corn pile, I was like, if you got the shot, take it. Because I did not want you waiting on me. I didn't know if you had him angled up there or not, but I was just like, I don't want. And the problem was, is like, there wasn't just one buck. There was like, what, three, four?
There's three other. There's three other bucks.
And I can't see all of them. And I'm like, I really don't want to have to make like this big movement and mess you up. Like that would have just been such a heartbreak at that point to have this moment screwed up because I'm trying to get, like, you know, I mean, I love the film. I love catching stuff on camera, but you know, at the end of the day, a deer down is what's most important. So I think that was part of it behind me. Go ahead.
For sure.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, for sure. And I appreciate your heart in that, but I was willing to play that, like, kind of long game with you. I was like, let me see if Travis can get this on shot, on camera and stuff. And so he steps out. I kind of hear you say, like, you know, take it or whatever. And so I settle in. And this buck, he is slightly quartering to me. And so I'm just trying to envision in my mind, like, his heart. And so I put it right on that front shoulder and slowly squeeze that trigger. And that gun goes off. Boom. And there's some smoke. And then it immediately clears. And that buck has dropped. I mean, like, doesn't even flinch, like, drop right there. And it might have been like, I don't know, like, it was as if, like, I don't know, like with the, I don't know, you, dad, like, you're Travis, you're a father. So, like, that moment when your child comes out and you're happy, like, that might as well have been us in the tree, bro. Like, we went nuts. Like, we were like, holy crap. Like, and so we celebrate, we high five, then the shakes start coming back, and we're like, there's adrenaline, and we're high fiving and, like, just celebrating in that moment, because, like, what a plot twist of, I'm thinking, oh, this is it. And then a couple minutes later, like, we have a buck down on the ground. Like, what are the odds of that? Like, it was just crazy. So, yeah, man, like, it was just cool. Like, and this buck is actually, it's sitting on my desk right now. It's over in the corner here, just sitting here. And And he, I don't know how old his buck is. I'm not the best at aging deer. But he's all broken up and beat up and just, you could tell he's worn down from the season. And for me, I honestly, like I wanted to get a mature doe. And then I was put in a situation where I was fortunate enough to get a decent buck on the ground. And my first ever buck with a muzzleloader, and we got to get it on film with my good friend and brother, like Travis, like, what more could you ask for? Last hunt of the season, the last few minutes of light, and we make it happen. So, man, I was just so thankful and so blessed to have that opportunity. And so we get down, and all this is on my like Instagram story if you want to see it. And I think Travis will make a video at some point, but.
Yeah, I will. So I mean, it's a great hunt, and I haven't started to edit it. I've looked through all the footage, but it's kind of one of those things where I feel like people are so like, if they're like me, like I just don't watch a whole lot of hunting videos right now because I've seen so many at this point.
Yeah.
I'm almost on. I've started watching some turkey hunts. I'm watching destination elk, even though I'm not elk hunting this year. So that footage will come out, but I'm kind of saving it for like a later date.
I get that summertime.
I'll edit it beforehand and let you watch it, but I'm thinking summertime whenever, you know, people start thinking about it again. So,
well, no rush on that. Like you edit it when you can, but I'm the same way. Like I'm spent on hunt videos. I watch a lot of the hunt in public. I'm good for a while.
Yep.
But yeah, so it's on there. You know, if you guys are wanting to see it, my Instagram is Matt_Dove, like Dove _ media. And I post a lot of my hunting content like on there, but
and you did a good job with that.
I appreciate that, man. And it was just a, like, I didn't put a whole lot of expectation. It's not like I went into this hunt looking to get a 170 or anything like that. Like if God provided a mature doe, like it was going down, but God had different plans. Like he's like, here's $4, you choose, you know, arise, kill and eat, like, you know. But yeah, I mean, it was just a good time. And it's fun when you go into hunts and you don't put unnecessary pressure on yourself and you're just there to really enjoy it. And even if we didn't get a deer that day, like I was okay with that. Like, yeah, everyone wants to get a deer because it's just the whole point of hunting, but like I was at peace like with that. Not every year we get deer down, and but it was just really blessed to be out there with you and enjoy that hunt together. It's awesome.
Absolutely, man. It was one of my favorite ones this year. It really was. Like I love there's something about a first. I don't know. Like so your first muzzleloader buck, you know, you'll remember being in a tree and that experience, and you know, and that's just cool. I love being a part of those stories. Like just seeing those, like Riley this year, being able to take his first buck with his bow all by himself. And, you know, the week before or the 2 days before I showed him how to hang his own stand, cause I've always hung a stand for him. So it's just been neat to kind of like, I'm learning hopefully how to get better at putting people in the right position whenever I get that, choosing situations. And I'll say this, that hunt kind of relit the fire for me a little bit for the season, especially with the recurve, because I thought, man, you know, I didn't really have, you know, the odds of you shooting one with your muzzleloader and then me shooting with the recurve, probably not super high. So I'm like, I got to give this recurve thing another shot. And so I went out the other night, and I don't think I've told this story yet, but I went out the other night and went to the property that I have, and I was just going to hunt from the ground just for time's sake. I didn't have a lot of time. And slid over and just picked the wrong path. Really, the deer came in. I look over my left hand shoulder. I didn't expect them to come in that way. 60 yards away at last light, and there's six of them. And I'm like, oh man! But it was so exciting, Matt. Like right before that, for probably an hour before dark, I look up on this right away, and there's deer after deer after deer, and I'm like, wow. I'm in the wrong spot. And so I was just like, man, that spot up there could be like the spot, because they were out early over there feeding in this right away, but there was no way for me to get over there. So just today I went over and scouted that, and I found a path, and there's only like two paths that they could be on, at least from what I can see from them scouting.
So my game plan is go in Saturday night. That's the season closes on Sunday. So
yeah.
You kind of just, I don't know. It's kind of funny going on that muzzleloader hunt with you kind of gave me that extra little boost. Like, man, it would be really cool to get your first recurve deer this year. Take the pressure off next year. You don't have to shoot a doe if you don't want to early on. If you do, you can. If you don't, you don't have to wait for a buck, whatever, and just have a good time. So we'll see what happens. That's my game plan on Saturday. So we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, dude, you got to keep me posted on that. If I didn't have stuff going on, man, I'd be tempted to, I'd be the film, the guy with the camera, and to experience that would be so cool with you. But, but dude, all respect to people who can harvest a deer with a recurve. That's just a whole nother level.
Getting that insanity. Close, man.
It's awesome.
Yeah, we will see how it goes. But no, it's been fun. Oh, it's been cool. I want to wrap up with this a little bit, Matt, and appreciate you coming back on. Give me some time just to kind of hear your season. It's been neat. You know, it's been a different season for you, like you talked about, not only like the season, deer season, but like season of life. So, and you don't have to dive into like specifics and crazy stuff like that. But I know like there's been kind of like in a hunting season, there's highs and lows, but it seems like for you, there's been like maybe some highs, some lows. One of those highs that we didn't touch on is that during the elk trip, you were not an engaged person. Man, and now unless something's changed that I didn't know about, you are. So tell us a little bit about seasons change, what God's doing in your life, and just some of those things to kind of close us out.
So I'm not single. I'm currently engaged, and I proposed December 3rd to my now fiance. Her name's Hannah. She's super cool. Love her to death. Her and I, we've had a crazy just story. It's just how we first met in college, freshman year, started dating towards the end of it. She transferred 10 hours away. And then, so we're 10 hours apart. And then she got into law school at Dayton University. So then we were 3 hours apart. And then I moved to Columbus. So then we were an hour apart. And then about a year ago, she moved to Columbus when she graduated law school and got her own apartment. So then we were 10 minutes apart. She studied for the bar, passed it. And then yesterday, actually, she got her first, accepted her first job.
Oh, good for her.
Which is super cool. Yeah, super cool. And she'll be working for like the child services here in Columbus and helping kids with just court cases and representing them and all that, and which is cool. And a lot of people, like, they go into the law field to make money, and in the sense of that, like, that's their why, is to make a lot of money. And that's not Hannah's why. I believe God has truly gifted her for that field of work, and she's not in it for, like, obviously everyone has to get paid and, you know, keep a roof over the head and all that stuff, but she does it because she's truly gifted in that. And also this line of work here, you're working with kids who come from really, really, really tough backgrounds. My brother Andrew, he did social work for the past 2 years, and so he worked with lawyers and stuff, and so it's cool to see now my fiance kind of stepping into that role. Just a cool, like, perspective. But so I just moved this past weekend. So I had my own apartment, and it got to my lease renewed at the end of January. So just like a day or two ago. And they were raising my rent, and I decided, you know what, I'm in this season of saving and saving for a wedding, and I just can't really efficiently do that with paying $1,000+ for living expenses. And I'm like, there's got to be someone from my church who would potentially let me, like, move in with them, like, rent out a room for just like a couple $100. And so I found a really cool family who had an extra room in their basement, and it's like walled off and finished and everything. And they're like, hey, like, yeah, definitely come live with us for a year. So I have this room, just super, super cheap. And it's been a, you know, and I won't go into crazy detail or anything, but it's just been a very, very hectic season. A lot of season of change, a lot of good stuff, but then also a lot of not so good stuff. But I guess to tie it back to faith, which is, you know, what Shedding Light is about and what you're about and clearly what I'm about. It's been a, well, one thing moving into this, like, I don't know, I think it's a 10 by 12 foot room. It's caused me to scale down life and really slow down. And, our church has been working through Psalms 23 and the idea and the heartbeat behind that passage is, that we are the sheep and Jesus is the shepherd and he's the good shepherd. And in that passage, he talks about, he will make us lie down in green pastures. He will lead us beside quiet waters. And then it, later on, it talks about, though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, like we will fear no evil because, like, we have a good shepherd that's guiding us. And so, you know, there's times in life where we're going to be walking through dark valleys and seasons that are tough and seasons that are difficult and transitions that are tough. But as long as we follow the good shepherd, as long as we stick to him and cling to him, like, he's going to take care of us no matter what. And he's going to lead us through that valley and he's going to lead us to greener pastures. But it's in his timing. It's not in ours. And so, it's been a season of just evaluating, okay, like God, like, though I'm going through a crazy season in life and there's a lot of good things, bad things, like, I think sometimes we want to be the own shepherds of our own lives, and God has a way of humbling us through that process. And so when we are going through like difficult times, like, we can't help but cling to the shepherd. But I think we oftentimes need reminded of that, because when we try to be like our own shepherds, like, we're not the good shepherd. We're just a bunch of sheep in this crazy world. And we end up in situations that, can, you know, end up leading, giving us harm or, just not being healthy. And so, it's just been a trying season, but also a season of just scaling back, slowing down, and just being still in moments when we need to be still and moving when the shepherd says to move. But ultimately reflecting back on the fact that, you know what, God is the good shepherd, and as no matter what happens in this life, good or bad, like, as long as we see him as our shepherd and we're willing to submit and follow him, he's going to take care of us no matter what. So it's just been a cool season to be in. So
yeah, man, that's good. That's really good stuff. I think that word that you keep saying, season, you know, it's a season that we're in, and I think about, you know, you just brought us through like your whole season of like hunting, and there was, you know, the start with, well, I mean, you start with Montana and just like the craziness of that. And then you're going into public land and the doe, and then it gets into the cold, cold winter and leaves are gone and we're freezing to death. And it's just, I don't know, in some ways, like the season that we go through during hunting is a reflection of the season we go through in life. Like, it's changing. Yes. It's not like we're hunting in Florida, right? It's life is a lot like hunting in Southeast Ohio or Appalachia, where it's just like you have changing things all the time. And one day it's hot, one day it's cold. But what's your constant going through that, you know? And like you said, it is our faith. It has to be, it can't be anything else. Relationships, you know, I mean, I love my wife, and she's my encourager, my helper, but I can't put all of, you know, I can't put all my weight down on her, because that's not fair to her. She's not meant to be that. That falls to Jesus, you know? And so I think, like you said, having that as a reminder, but sometimes, I don't know, it's just, we say that, but there is wake up calls that comes from time to time where we're like, wait a second, I'm trying to do this all on my own, and that has never worked out before. So why do I keep trying this? And it's, it just makes you thankful sometimes. Like, I don't know. I mean, I guess where I'm at Matt, is I'm in a season of just being grateful because I see, I'm almost like in a, if I had to describe it like physically, I feel like it's spring, like in the season that I'm in, like we're coming out of a winter and starting to see like buds. We're starting to see some things happen, starting to see some relationships form. I'm connecting with some people through different avenues and it's just like exciting. Yet every so often, like in spring, it's just, there's a cold day and like something happens. There's been like a lot of drama the last 3 weeks of my life with different things. Mm. And, so what do you hang on to? That's for the sure. biggest thing. Like you brought up, it's our faith in Christ and what I think Jesus brings us through. So spot on, man. Yes. Really good thoughts there.
Yes. Mm. Love it.
That's man. Good. Me too, bud. Man, I love talking to you. I enjoyed hearing the stories like always, just being able to shoot the breeze and talk. We don't get to do it all the time. And
no.
So just want to say thanks again for being willing to carve out a little bit of time here and catch me up on your hunting season. I mean, I obviously knew about the one story, but kind of hearing about the whole thing was pretty neat.
For sure, man. Dude, yeah, thanks for having me on. And whenever you want to chat, I'm always here.
Absolutely, brother. Well, I will I'll let you go, and I'm sure we'll be hearing some more stories, and maybe distantly, we don't know when, you and I are talking about another elk hunt down the road, and we'll see how all that plays out with life and careers and everything else. But we'll cross that bridge at another date. But I appreciate you coming on. I'll chat with you later on. Okay,
all right, see you, man. Have a good one.